Losing ground, the winter waves pound our shores and wash away our beaches. This season, Sunset Beach is taking a beating, and the public is being asked to stay away from a section where a bike path has been taken out by the waves, resulting in a 20-foot drop along the roadway. Over the years, we've seen sandbags in use along the coast in Lanikai, and on the south shore in Waikiki, where the shoreline is man-made, an experiment with a sand mattress is underway. Joining me now is University of Hawaii Geology Professor Chip Fletcher, who's been a constant and strong voice with what science is telling about our shorelines over several decades. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So what can you share with us? You were out at Sunset Beach that day, I think, at the news conference. What's the takeaway there?
Well, this is the latest in several episodes of extreme erosion that have taken place over the last couple of years. You might recall in 2014, I think it was, the area around Rocky Point, a number of houses got undermined. I think someone's pool actually fell in. Now Sunset is experiencing extreme erosion. In all these cases, the shoreline is moving landward because of the waves, but the sort of quiet operator behind the scene is sea level rise, which as the ocean rises, the shoreline has to move landward.
Right. And you had an article published in Civil Beat today where you talked about the positive thing is that Mayor Caldwell has acknowledged that we need to do something about this problem.
Yeah, Mayor Caldwell came up with the remarkable words, we have to learn to live with water and soften the shoreline. And what he's acknowledging here is that sea level is rising. It has begun to accelerate. And in coming decades, we're going to be seeing dramatic forms of flooding and coastal erosion throughout the islands. And what's going on in Sunset Beach this week and last week and what happened a few years ago are not isolated incidents. They're a glimpse of the future.
Right. And we were talking about, 20 years or so, we saw the situation in Lanikai, and homeowners there put in some sandbags, which I guess are still there?
Yes, they are.
And so what's the takeaway on the sandbags? Do they work?
Well, sandbags were an experiment to not build rock walls, but instead put in something that was conceived to be temporary at the time. It's turned out that in several locations, the sandbags still exist 10, 20 years later. Lanikai is not the only place with sandbags. They've been used in several other locations. They essentially end up being the same as a rock wall. They are permanently hardening the shoreline.
Right. And those sandbags have held up.
They have held up. There is some vandalism to them, but they are still there. Yeah.
And then the experiment with the mattresses in Waikiki, how does that work?
That was to cover an exposed foundation from an old tavern that was dangerous for tourists. If they could twist an ankle or walk on pieces of rock that could hurt them. In all these cases, the sandbags and the mattress, the idea is to protect the land. Case of the mattress is to protect the tourist because of exposed foundations. But they don't deal with the beach. The beach itself is of concern, and what we need to focus on is beach management rather than land protection.
Okay, so how do we do that?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. In a place like Waikiki, where you have largely an engineered beach, I believe it's appropriate to spend money to maintain the beach. It's like building a highway. It deteriorates over time, and you need to maintain it, and we do that by putting sand on it. There were some mistakes made in the 2012 beach nourishment episode in Waikiki that hopefully we can correct next time. But we do have a beach there along most of Waikiki, and we probably would not have one except for the beach nourishment in 2012.
What was the mistake there?
The sand was partially ground up, we believe. These sand grains come from the reef. They're very fragile. They're easily broken. And the dredging and delivery process that was used broke the sand grains. And so We see some milky water as a result of that.
So the water quality is not all that great.
Well, yeah, during the time of the beach nourishment and during high wave periods, that's the case. But there are other beaches, country beaches, if you will, where the cost-benefit ratio doesn't suggest that the millions of dollars spent at Waikiki would be worthwhile. And in fact, we just don't have the budget for nourishing every beach that is eroding. And so you need to think about how are we going to get out of the way of the shoreline as it migrates landward. What is an exit strategy for beachfront homeowners and for highways?
Are you aware of where this is happening on the neighbor islands at the rate that it's happening, you know, like we're seeing in Waikiki?
Maui is experiencing coastal erosion far worse than Oahu and Kauai. One reason is that the rate of sea level rise is higher there because the island itself is subsiding because of the young age of the shield volcanoes. But that rapid rate of sea level rise means that they're experiencing erosion on over 90% of their beaches, many of which have been armored with seawalls over the years and have disappeared as a consequence.
Are we doing better on seawalls?
I like to think that we are moving in that direction, especially with the mayor's recent words. We need to soften the shoreline.
Right. We do have that Office of Sustainability that he has created, and we do have DLNR that, you know, looks out for the resource. But if the departments are still signing the permits for structures being built too close to the coastline, what do we do?
Well, so many of our beachfront lots were developed decades ago. It was actually decades ago that the Hawaii Coastal Zone Management Program came into existence following a federal coastal zone management that was created under NOAA. Unfortunately, the rules that were put in place back in the 70s to guide shoreline development in Hawaii and elsewhere in the United States did not recognize the reality of sea level rise. And since then, we've had an increasing number of roads and homes that are exposed to the moving shorelines. And as I said in my piece in Civil Beat this morning, there's a slow motion collision taking place.
And so what's the answer? Do Band-Aid measures to kind of stop the structures from falling in right away?
This is a problem that should be characterized as needing management, not fixing, because you can't fix this problem. It is extremely difficult. There are no ultimate winners. I hope that in decades from now, we still have beaches so that, families in Hawaii in the middle of this century, despite the fact that sea level is rising, still have beaches to go to. But if we protect all the beachfront homes and roads with seawalls, that is not likely to be the case. So we need to figure out, if you will, what is the triage here? What areas have beaches that we absolutely must protect? And what areas are we willing to build seawalls because we feel that what's on the landward side of the shoreline is more important?
In Waikiki, which is, basically the economic, driver, right, for tourism, you have that experiment going on with the mattresses. Where did that idea come from? Where did you steal that from?
The mayor's administration came up with that. I think, Rick Eggett and Dolan Eversole, who are part of the Waikiki Improvement Association, were in a conference in Miami Beach, Florida, and they learned about the beach mattress, the sand mattress there. They thought it would be useful for that little corner of Kuhio Beach.
And do you think that will lend itself to other areas?
That's a small little problem, a little Band-Aid for a corner of the beach where erosion has exposed an old foundation. There's a much larger issue at play here. We have hundreds and hundreds of homes. We have miles and miles of road, all exposed to erosion either right now or in coming decades. How are we going to move out of the way of the rising sea level and still have some beaches? Or are we not going to move out of the way? We also have to keep in mind that it's sea level rise doesn't just cause the shoreline to move landward. It also causes the water table under the land to rise. And so at the same time that the shoreline is eroding, there are new wetlands forming underneath our homes and roads, mauka of the shoreline, because the water table rises with sea level rise. And, you know, a wetland is where the water table is sitting on the land surface.
So let's talk about that, because we do have some areas, I think North Shore, you've got the Wildlife Preserve out there by Campbell. What's the effect on that?
So in a place where you have a natural setting, such as a wildlife preserve, there are maps available for the managers of that setting to see what areas are more likely to flood in the future, where is there erosion taking place, and they can adapt their management methodologies to these futures that they see. The maps show them, you know, under, say, 6 inches of sea level rise or 1 or 2 or 3 feet of sea level rise, what areas are vulnerable and what areas are not. I have to say, though, a lot of our wildlife managers are busy day in and day out with the brush fires of feral cats and invasive species, and they are really understaffed and under-resourced. Just throw that in there. You know, kudos to our wildlife managers, because with the daily onslaught of problems that they have to solve, to ask them to look forward several decades is a challenge. They do it. But they have problems right now that we need to deal with.
They have a lot of alligators in their swamp.
Alligators in their swamp. And in fact, that plays into the problems with climate change, because if we can clean up the problems now, the natural system will be more resilient to the stresses that come as a result of climate change, including sea level rise.
And then let's hopscotch back over into town in an area which is a chronic flooding problem, which is in the Mapunapuna area, where the water table comes up. And the last time I did a story out there, you know, I saw fish on the street, on sidewalks.
Yeah, Mapunapuna is a glimpse of our future. The ocean at the highest tides of the month comes up through the storm drain system. Sometimes that water is fresh water because it was old rain that flowed into the pipes and never got to drain into the ocean. Sometimes it's salt water. The city put what are known as duckbill boots on the outfall pipes a couple of years ago, and those helped for a while, but it seems like they're no longer helping as much as they were. Mapunapuna flooding was especially bad during the recent King tides. Mapunapuna is an old arm of the lagoon. It has been filled, and the fill is subsiding. So locally right there in that neighborhood, the relative sea level rise is sort of high, if you will, and that's why it's experiencing what's known as nuisance flooding.
Yeah, I was surprised because in talking to the businesses there, I was actually told that they have warned their workers that if they are caught driving their company trucks through that water, they could lose their jobs.
Yeah,
because
when it's
that's
salt water,
very corrosive.
Yeah, it'll rust out the undercarriage of a car. And many of those businesses in that one little area where the flooding is worst keep a tide calendar by the front door, and they schedule appointments around the tides, and they know not to schedule an appointment when it's going to be spring high tide.
Yeah, it's amazing what, you know, our lives are being affected by this in so many ways, with your business, your home, your recreation with our beaches. Can we talk a little bit about money? Because on the federal level, I don't know that it's very hopeful that we're going to get more money to deal with things like this.
Well, when you have a president that's engaged in denying the reality of the scientific fact of climate change and sea level rise, you're correct. We can't expect much federal assistance in these problems. One of the challenges to our state legislature is to look at the climate change problem and identify new sources of revenue that might be used to not only mitigate the problem, which is to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, but to adapt to the problem, because large amount of climate change is already in the pipeline, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Do you think that we might get to a point where we're charged a fee to go to the beach or something, you know, where that money will go to help protect that resource going forward for our kids?
That's how they do it in New Jersey. In fact, when you're on the beach in New Jersey, if you don't have your day pass, they ask you to leave. There's a a guard that walks around, checks everybody's day pass, and you feel good paying it. At least I did, because you know that that money is being directed to the preservation of that beach. So new sources of revenue that have a relationship to the problem where the money is being spent, I think, you know, it's something for us to consider.
Okay. Lots to think about in the new year. Chip Fletcher, thank you.
Thank you, Catherine.
Chip Fletcher is a professor of geology and geophysics at the University of Hawaii at Manoa's School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology. He also leads the Coastal Geology Group, which investigates coastal change over time.